This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Oh, good afternoon, everyone. And we have a newcomer. Welcome. Thank you for joining us on this day, the sixth day of the seven-day Nehane Sesshin. So I wanted to begin by acknowledging that this is the sixth day. And noting that that Sesshin builds momentum as we go through the days. There's a strong momentum that's built up in us. And that sometimes the mind, especially at this time of the Sesshin, not always, but sometimes the mind wants to wander away a little bit. And it's really quite helpful and useful to keep that momentum within, to keep that momentum going. So it kind of like wants to leave and get into ordinary self concerns about, sometimes that takes the form of planning or thinking about what you're going to do when you get home and all of that. But we're here now. We're still here now. And not only that, but we have this afternoon, we have this evening, and we have tomorrow morning with Zazen. So we're keeping the momentum going. So just noticing that, as we mentioned before, about where your mind is and maybe intending consciously to keep the momentum going and to keep within. I know from experience we will all know what to do once the Sesshin is over. We'll know exactly what we need to pick up in our lives. We'll know exactly where we have to go, what emails we have to catch up in, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so we can just leave that and enjoy our time here. And I want to say also, including all of tomorrow, including the cleanup, the temple, and the rooms where we've stayed, and the kitchen after lunch, and including the social lunch. So we're still in the container of the Sesshin, but then we can talk. So won't that be fun? It usually is for some people. For some people, they don't want to talk still. That's fine too, but anyway, just keeping that, and then it'll go away, it'll slowly drift away, but the container of the Sesshin, that is, but not what we've established here. And that's kind of the theme of today's talk. So we've come to prajna, the paramita of prajna. Does that sound familiar? Like we chant it every day, prajna paramita. And not only do we chant the prajna paramita sutra, but then we pay homage to the prajna paramita sutra. So it's, I was reading some Dogen and reading one of his sutras called One Bright Jewel, sometimes translated as One Bright Pearl. And so I don't know, this just metaphor came into my mind that it's like we have this crown of jewels, the paramitas, and maybe the prajna is the center jewel of it all. But also to take home with us that phrase and that Zen phrase came from a guy named Genshu, who uh, who was a fisherman who had never heard any teachings, and yet he had this realization of prajna, which is what we're going to discuss a bit today. So when he had that, he knew he needed to, as Bodhidharma suggested, take instruction. So he found a teacher in the story goes on. But there are many Zen stories, usually in the old stories, the people who had these realizations became monks, but not all of them. And there are many stories that people were completely, had no exposure to teachings or even practice, sitting, but just were going about their daily lives, but had a realization. That's how immediate prajna is and can be in our lives. And we have the great gift and advantage, if you will, of cultivating. So what is this prajna paramita? So that's a big question, and many books have been written about it, and many, many, many talks for centuries have been given about it. And this, what we chant, is the pith version, the condensed version of 28 lines. But there's a whole volume of 10,000 lines, and then there are intermediary ones. I'm not familiar with them all. I can only memorize so much, so I just stick with the prajna paramita that we chant. But anyway, it's a very big subject. And in a way, it's a phrase, I think Angie uses it, but she got it from Suzuki Roshi. It's untalkaboutable, in a way, because we can't pin it down exactly, so we have to talk around it, and we have to use metaphors and paradoxes and different kinds of language that may seem mysterious or confounding, and maybe that can be the point. You know, when we're confounded, then sometimes that's when we open up. You know, like the story of Einstein and MC squared. You know, he just like was wrestling with it, and then he let himself relax. And then it came to him. So as I've said, that's part of what we're doing. We're coming to the cushion to relax our mind-body, to sink into really deep where we are. So many words have been written about it, and words can help us. Words actually, I like to think of the metaphors. For me, it's like words are like a cairn on a hill, or tree markings in the forest, or rock pointers on a path. Words can give us some direction, perhaps, if we're open to it. But the words will never capture it, because language never captures the essence. All of language is a metaphor, actually, or some kind of could be another poetic term, but anyway, it's not the real thing, you know. The language isn't that. So prajna, what is that? So it's so difficult to put in words that the Buddha had trouble putting it in words. So after his big realization, big moment of prajna, which we're still practicing with, he had these thoughts, according to the stories, that it was so big and so difficult to understand that he couldn't do it. So he had his moment of self-doubt or maybe moments. It's all kind of a story, but it's a very deep and story that goes into us, has for all these many years, because he just, what can I say? What can I? And then he had his second realization when he remembered his bodhisattva vows, and he said to himself, okay, there will be those that get this, and I need to say this. I need to put this out there, and whoever gets it, gets it. And I'm going to start with these five guys who are his seeker buddies wandering around the forests of northern India. So he went to each of them and he said, you know, we've been looking for this and I found something about it, so would you like to hear it? And they all said yes. He was transfigured. This is part of the story too. He had a presence that was immediately understandable by these guys. They said, well, this person does, he knows something. And so he, another part of our chant, he taught at Varanasi. He sat down with these men at Deer Park and did the first turning of the Dharma wheel. So we're not alone if we think we can't understand it or find a way to express it even to ourselves, what this is. So the root word of prajna is ja, which is a knowing. So there's vijna, which is a sort of cognitive mind knowing or discriminative knowing, which is all part of us and very important. So we keep that up and we will know what to do. But here we're focusing on the prajna part, which is, in a way, the all-knowing, that knows the whole thing together, that knows everything, that doesn't divide things up. That it's, well, those are the words I'm putting out. It knows also that there are infinite forms of knowing, prajna does, and it kind of brings them all together. It groups them and lets them be in harmony together, sort of puts them all together. So there are as many infinite forms of prajna as there are infinite forms. So, and different ones will occur to each of us differently. So Dogen mentions this somewhere, and I couldn't find that and bring that with me. He doesn't mention prajna per se as a word too much, but he likens it to a seed. Our seeds, the seeds of prajna are within. The seeds of prajna are within each human being. And Dogen expands it to everything, infinite forms, mountains and rivers. And I like to, because I've been a gardener for most of my life, the seed really struck me, and especially because seed starting is my favorite part of gardening. That's the miracle. Here's this little looking inert little thing, sometimes so tiny you can barely pick them up with your fingers. You might need tools to pick them up. And then it takes some care and preparation to prepare seeds, well, in a transplant tray or in a seed bed. Both working the ground or outside the ground, which some seeds like to start outside the ground. So that's all what we're doing here. We're preparing the ground. We're cultivating the ground. We're getting the right soil. Then we're putting the seed in at the right depth, and then we're letting it be. We're letting it flourish on its own. its life force, except we keep attentive to it. We have to keep attentive to the dryness of the soil, the water, how the light needs of each particular seed. So that's very specific in gardening. But we do have to keep, attentive to the seeds. And at any moment, they'll sprout. Here's the thing, attentive to that too, because they'll say on the seed packets 14 days, 24 days, whatever they'll say. But the attention to prajna is that at any moment, it'll sprout. As Jero brought in yesterday, like being in the present moment, then that's when we, to mix the metaphors, that's when we're open to being caught by prajna. When prajna will just be in us. So that being in us, again, will occur differently to every person. So it's really very difficult to put words on that, but we will know it. We will know it. And we may know it in small ways, and our part of our mind may go, no, I don't really believe that. No, is that really realization? Is that really prajna? Is that really realization? But, be open to what your own sprouts are. Be open to that. So when we chant the Heart Sutra, we say Avalokiteshvara when practicing deeply the Prajnaparamita. So Avalokiteshvara is the personification, the bodhisattva, actually, of compassion and wisdom combined. And in many stories in Zen and other Buddhist traditions, Avalokiteshvara hears all the sounds of the world. So sound is a very important way traditionally that prajna appears in many Zen stories and others. Prajna appears as the sound of a bird or a thunderclap or a tree branch cracking. But it also could occur in modern times in, the sound of a fire truck or an ambulance. The sound of weeping, someone weeping, that's a traditional one. So prajna appears in many forms, but not only the sound form. Also, any form that we can experience. So it's a bit odd, and this is the paradox for language. It's a bit odd that prajna is empty and contains everything, but it appears often through our senses, including the mind sense. But prajna appears in the stories through touch, like the touch of a caterpillar. Or taste. What if there was a poem that one monk said to another, the taste of this plum is so sweet. And that was his realization. That was his understanding of prajna. So there's prajna also large and small. So these sprouts that come up, they each have their place in the largeness of prajna and as each individual single one. So, and language too, words, and I've mentioned before that chanting, reverberates through our body, so that goes in at a different kind of, not just the sound, but the whole. So it's the whole mind, body, heart that prajna appears in. So prajna is always here also. It's in the present. And it's also, because it's so large, it's kind of outside of time too, another paradoxical way that it, to have to talk about it. So what Dogen says is, you know, when we're practicing meditation, following the Buddha way, studying the self, and studying the self to forget the self is when our minds and bodies, mind-body drops away and all other mind-bodies drop away, that's when prajna appears. So Dogen is able to very beautifully put these paradoxes and in a language that is mysterious yet gets to the heart of it. That experience that we can know, but Dogen's way of knowing was so profound, he was able to say, this is what we're doing, and then our mind and body and all body minds drop away, and then we are intimate with all things. We and all things become intimate. So we, with prajna, become part of everything. And it's not our little self, but our bigger self. So he also goes on in that little passage, which is from the Genjo Koan, one of his famous sutras. He says, when that intimacy happens, no trace of realization remains, and that no trace continues endlessly. That no trace of realization continues endlessly. So that certainly, when I read that first, stopped me in my tracks. It went like, oh, wow, what does that mean? But it seemed like it was something important to get in touch with. What does that mean? So finding some instruction. So how does that work? So we know that too. It's not the end. It continues within us and without us. So there's a little sprout of prajna comes up, and it's not the end. It's going to continue on as long as we continue on. So not getting hung up on whatever realization we have, because they can be quite powerful. And then we think, oh, that's it. I've gotten it. It's the end. All right. So including people have stories go, have not continued to practice, just walked away. And maybe that would be necessary for some for a while, or practice continuing in a way that's not so formal. But it's not the end, and we know that. Prajna continues on if we stay open to it, if we don't lock down on saying, oh, okay, that's it, and that's it. Another one can come up at any moment. It's within us and without us. So a short poem by Ikkyu, who was a Zen master of a renegade sort, who was very down to earth. And I really like that down to earthness in Ikkyu. And this is from the poem I'm going to read is from a collection called Crow with No Mouth. You can't be anyone but you. Therefore, you are that other one you love. So, thank you and for your attention, and would you like to say something? I would be very happy to hear from you all.
That was a perfect Valentine's poem.
And we had a perfect Valentine's breakfast from some bodhisattva who went around and found the missing hearts that, you know, because of the way the world is, the heart company got sold and then another company took over. Some bodhisattva found those hearts. Thank you. Dennis.
I could tell by the reaction in the room that we liked what you said about knowing exactly what to do when sesshin ends. And it made me mindful of one of my favorite Zen verses, which I would like to offer to the Sangha as we near the completion of sesshin. Coming, going, the waterfowl leaves no trace, nor does it need direction.
Thank you, Dennis. Beautiful. Thank you.
Did you write that, Dennis?
I thought you did.
That's a tribute to Dogen.
David.
On the topic of poetry.
Yeah. Wonderful.
I had one come through today from Eken Rushi, who wrote a book called Raven Rushi. It's about animals in the forest, and Raven is a teacher, and her porcupine, and the usual menagerie. And you can imagine just like this, actually. And there's a creek. You probably said creek. There's a creek like this, running between the trees, and it has forever, and it exposes the roots. And Raven told his Sangha that I'm going to be leaving, I'm going to go away. And Porcupine said, where shall we look for you? I can't say this without Oh, where shall we look for you then when you're gone? And Raven said, look for me now. This isn't emotion, this is forgetfulness. Look for me where the bare cedar roots are exposed by the creek. That's I just watched it, but that's the image, just like this. Look for me where the The roots of the cedar are exposed by the running water. Anyway, I recommend it. That is not it. But that's the best I can do.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing Aitken Roshi in. Wonderful teacher. And and quite a poet, too. You know, his book of gathas are highly recommended. Book of short verses, too. Maybe instead of setting our own intention, we'd like to recite some intentions that somebody else, who's a wonderful Zen teacher, set out, Aitken Roshi's. I've forgotten the name of the book exactly, but gatha is in the title. Short forms of short verses. Thank you.
And they all begin with some activity.
Yes.
Doing kinhin. Now, I vow with all sentient beings. Sorry.
That's okay.
One who intends, and then there's the.
Yes, they all begin with an activity. I can, one I use sometimes at night is as I fall asleep, I vow with all beings to enjoy the dark and the silence and to rest in the great unknown. So sometimes nice.
I really didn't have anything.
Other
than to ask if you could maybe read the poem again, the one that you had.
Oh, surely.
At some point.
Yeah, it's always good to read poems aloud twice, and I didn't do that this time, but it is it's a really good practice at a poetry reading. You read them aloud, especially if they're short, or even if they're complicated and long. So, you can't be anyone but you. Therefore, you are that other one you love. Crow with no mouth.
Made me think of Basho's poem, the temple bell has stopped ringing, but the sound keeps coming through the flowers. One of my favorites that we can take with us.
Well, would you say it? Say that again and say it. Beautiful.
The temple bell has stopped ringing, but the sound keeps flowing through the flowers.
Zen is remarkable in that it has so many poetic expressions of prajna. I mean, because poetry language is not discursive language. It's a very special kind of language that humans have, as far as we know, but we know so little about other sentient beings, but as far as we know, they don't have poetry. Although, when you listen to birdsong, it certainly sounds like poetry. But poetry is, and Zen particularly has, also Chan, also from, you know, the Chan poets that are kind of the grandfathers of Zen, or those two families got connected some somehow with Bodhidharma. Sound of the wind.
I wanted to say the prajna seeds reminded me of all the acorns outside. And then we see so many of the big, beautiful oak trees around here that it kind of reminds me of how our prajna can grow from a little seed to an ancient tree.
Wonderful. Thank you, River. Yes, it can grow quite big. Thank you. That's an important point. It seems like a little seed, but it can grow very large. Thank you.
In the talk, new talk, you talked about prajna and the meaning of the word, first half of it, and the next. Would you again, please?
Yeah, surely. Thank you. So the root is jna and prajna, and then there's vijna. And they're kinds of knowing. So there's the they're Sanskrit words actually. So the root of is knowing, and there are many kinds of knowing that are done differently, or that are approached differently, I should say, in different forms of Buddhism. So that word jna is also jhana, so deep concentrated meditation states is another form of Buddhism uses those. So that's a deep kind of knowing, the mind and the body. But it's not the same thing as prajna. The other word that's used especially in the Mahayana is vijna. That distinction is made between vijna is the mind of the sort of the cognitive operator, the mind that makes distinctions and discriminations, that allows us to function at this level of reality where we function, you know. It's just, we just function on so many levels of reality, but we're just not aware of them all. So the vijna is the one, in this time we're living in particularly, is like sort of the ascendant one. But there's always prajna, which contains vijna. So prajna is all-knowing or wisdom beyond wisdom. So the large knowing. So I hope that's addressed some of your question. Thank you.
Continuing that,
of wisdom, being it appears. But doesn't it always appear when we're in relationship? I mean, basically it's a relationship thing. We're in relationship with everything. We see relationship with everything is wisdom. And one of the fun things about Sesshin is the small, when we interact and collaborate, it's like our momentary wisdom is showing up to move at a glance to act if that's a signal. Or we talk about this wisdom that can't be described, can't be seen, we taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. So can you taste wisdom? And when we experience wisdom with all things, or we experience wisdom with what we're right with, when we're in harmony internally and externally. And I just wanted to kind of ask about, maybe this is applied wisdom, what I'm talking about, is what happens, you know, we have wisdom, we want the wisdom, we seek enlightenment, we want to be bitten by wisdom. But doesn't it require like relationships?
It does. You're absolutely right. We've kind of touched on that a bit about how that's where reflecting one another and seeing our wisdom, and how as human beings we're set up to be, there's no way we can't be in relationship. We are in relationship, and especially you brought up in human beings, so thank you very much for bringing that aspect, reminding us again another joy and jewel of Sesshin is that it's we create this whole everyone working together. And also, that's the Bodhisattva path. We do, that's the continuing on. So the Bodhisattva has wisdom, has experienced it in some sense. And the Bodhisattva takes the vows to continue it on in relationship. Avalokiteshvara, hearing all the sounds of the world. And relationship also with all of the outside, with the sentient beings that we don't know what their sentience is like. We can't describe it in a way. But trees, we better be in relationship with those. We need to really be in relationship with water, with trees, with everything. And it's very immediate when it's relationship with other human beings. So that's part of, I think, that section of the Genjo Koan, which you teased out, the relationship of our body and mind and all others, and yet they appear and the together, and the no trace continues endlessly. So within and without, and as you said, when we're in harmony and when we're present, when we are able to see someone needs a hand here, or this stone needs getting off the floor, or this drop of tea needs getting off the zendo floor. Whatever it is, I mean, the small things, that attention is wisdom, in a sense. Well, thank you for another big picture. Mark.
I liked what you said about the signposts, that these paramitas are like cairns that we might see, or rocks stacked up to just kind of give an indication of a way to go. And in talking about wisdom, the thing that's really given me heart, in spite of the evidence I see in myself of making mistakes over and over, is that bodhisattva vow that you mentioned, that, because I've read descriptions of that as being the willingness to remain in the mud and the blood of this mm-hmm. world, meaning it's not about having attained some kind of perfection, but rather the willingness to remain when you don't know the right thing to do, or even when you try to do the right thing and it turns out wrong, and with the best of intention. Hence the need to practice to try to keep refining our understanding of when to act and when to have restraint. But there's something about that that feels so hopeful to me, that just to remain in the mud and the blood is a kind of an act of compassion in itself.
Very much. Thank you. Was Sylvia? Were you going? Sylvia.
When the prajna happens, one usually in relationship with something, but at the same time, there's no thoughts at all. You go into an unknowing, and people have felt that the tree is actually you. You actually feel that you are as tall as the tree. And it's something that one will never forget if you have a deep one. And there is a silent spaciousness about it, silent in the ways of inevitable, not able to talk about, like you mentioned.
Thank you. Yes, you don't forget it. You don't forget it. And yes, you're there in relationship, but you're not there. It's like, that's what Dogen says, the body mind drops away. So you're there with the prajna and the relationship.
And actually, the emptiness that is felt is the inherent self is being forgotten. The I, me, mine at that moment is gone. And a Roshi can check it out completely with a whole series of questions, and one is able to answer them spontaneously without a thought. Mm. And after that, all the koan studies are about that state of mind. So you'll be doing your koans after that, just like that. You just know it. Just intuitively know the answer to the koan. So it is an experience.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.